W-T-H.
What the hell?
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 This is the WTH.
The WTH Podcast.
Hold on to your butts.
Jason Casey. Kareem Daniels. And Nate Darling. From the Darling New Media Studios,
this is the WTH Podcast.
Hi there, welcome into another episode of the WTH Podcast. Hope you had a great weekend. Thanks for joining us if you're watching on Facebook Live. Hello. If you're watching on YouTube, hello. We got a lot to get to today. Some of it good, some of it bad. But we're going to take them both, and there you'll have the WTH Podcast. Jason's still out sick because we record all three shows for the week in one night. So if you're sick, you miss three.
Exactly.
And if you're sick, we don't want it.
None of it.
Keep that nonsense out ya.
What happens when you have little rugrats at the house?
I'm feeling saucy. Yeah, we got a lot to get to here. The MLB Hall of Fame ballot is out. We will go through and talk about who should get in and who should go pound sand. A Louisiana man says the devil framed him.
Devil made him do it.
And there's a new campaign on meth in South Dakota. And they've titled it Meth. We're on it.
I believe it.
Good job, South Dakota.
Nothing else to do.
We'll get to
you get through those long nights in the oil fields.
Oh boy, we will get to all of that and more. But we're going to start the show off. We've got a little breeze shooting to do. A story that we bumped over from the Friday episode because we were running a little low on time and I didn't want to rush through that. Ford has unveiled its new 2021 Mustang Mach-E electric SUV. The automaker is taking on Tesla with a strong EV statement, including a mid 3 second time for its 0 to 60 mile per hour acceleration. If you're watching on video, you can see it on the screen there. That's why I wanted to do it this way.
Does your battery die when you hit it from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds?
Well, it's got a 300 mile range, so you could probably do that a few times and still be okay. Unless you're a cop and the previous cop didn't charge the car. Now, Ford has drawn inspiration from its past as it looks to the future with the all-new electric Mustang Mach-E SUV. There have been many iterations of the Mustang through the decades, from convertibles to high-performance Shelby-badged coupes. But this model represents the many firsts for the famous automaker. The Mach-E has four doors. It's an SUV. It has an electric powertrain. And there have also never been two distinct vehicles with the Mustang name sold at the same time. Now, to be sure, the Mach-E has familiar Mustang design cues, but it's really an entirely new concept. It's been designed to be an electric alternative for Mustang enthusiasts as well as Tesla intenders. Of course, what it doesn't have is a V8 rumble. Instead, the electric model runs quiet and quick based on the video shown during the model's online unveiling about a week ago. Or if you're watching live, yesterday. Ford plans to have the Mach-E in dealerships in late 2020 with the higher performance Mach-E GT following in spring 2021. And here's what we know so far. It competes with the Jaguar I-Pace, the Tesla Model Y. It looks like a Mustang-inspired two-row SUV. Its powertrain is 255 horsepower, 282 horsepower, 332 horsepower, and 459 horsepower electric rear and all-wheel drive. So I'm guessing those are the levels of performance. Uh-huh. It will retail from $45,000 to $61,500, and it will be on sale in about a year. Although you can reserve it now if you really want to. And then we're looking at Consumer Reports. They've got their whole take on the whole thing. But it's very interesting. It's a very interesting looking car. Inside, it looks a lot like a Tesla. It's got the big screen in the middle of the dashboard. Excuse me. It's quite something. Oh, hey, and they've got, it's got the, they put out the photo that everybody does. They have a cooler in where the engine would be because that's a storage space because there's no engine.
Oh, wow.
So to speak. But that's what it looks like from the rear.
I want to buy it just for the cooler space.
Right. And that's what it looks like. So, Kareem, what do you think? Is it saucy enough for you?
I don't know.
I will say this, having driven a Chevy Volt, we got the Chevy Volt a little over a year ago. An electric powertrain is really a delight because when you step down on the accelerator, you go.
Okay.
There's not the, it's sort of like when you get into a golf cart. You step down, you go.
Yeah.
Except this one goes 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. So it's a very different type of driving. You get used to it pretty quickly, but it's got a different feel to it.
Yeah. I haven't driven an electric car, so I don't know. I have to drive one to make a decision.
I mean, it's not cheap. It's certainly not cheap, but I mean, an SUV of that level is not going to be cheap anyway.
Nah. But I could buy a truck for that much.
You could, but a nice
big Ford truck.
You could, and then you'd pay that much more in gas.
That's true.
Because gas is not cheap these days. Although it's funny, my wife had a business trip. She had to go to Houston for a couple of days a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And she's like, Texas is so stupid. Gas was like $2.20.
Yeah.
And she goes, I said, yeah, but you're still in Texas. And if you like Texas, great, good for you. But I mean, it's humid and it's Texas, and I would much rather be here.
Yeah, fuck Texas.
I mean, I would rather pay more for gas and live here in California than live in Texas and go, woo, we got cheap gas. I mean, good for you.
Yes.
Good for you. That's what I say. My wife would love an SUV.
Yeah.
She loves the electric vehicle. I don't know that we are going to be getting this. Certainly not as a, you know, the first ones that come out.
Oh yeah. You want to make sure that they got the bugs out before you.
Yeah. We'll wait for the supercharged GT version.
Yeah.
That's what we'll wait for. So it's interesting to see what's happening. Electric cars are, despite all of the best efforts of the Trump administration, electric cars are going to be a thing.
Yes. And then I need to see how much room is in the back.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I have an SUV in
right. It's hard to say because some of them that look big, they are not really that big once you get inside them.
No.
They will do things like this one's got a huge center console. So therefore I've gotten in SUVs before and went, I had more room in the seat in my Honda Fit.
Yeah.
When I had that, because it didn't have this huge center console taking up all this space.
And then some of them will give you an extra row of seats, which will cut down on the amount of space you actually have to put stuff in the back.
Right, right,
because
right.
When you fold those down, it takes up probably about a foot.
You know, the display in the center of the dashboard, it reminds me of the things that they make you order with at Taco Bell if you actually go inside.
Yeah.
Can I get a chalupa on this? A chalupa. So that is coming in about a year. I can't wait to hear what the Cars Are has to say about it. Just saying. Cars Are podcast records right here at Darling New Media, by the way. And you can too. Hit us up, darlingnewmedia.com. And you too could be recording your podcast in our lovely studios with video and all of the other accoutrement. Yeah, so check it out today. There you go. I've sponsored the podcast.
There you go.
I didn't pay myself any money to say that. All right. So the list of every player on the 2020 Hall of Fame ballot from Major League Baseball is out. If you're watching on Facebook Live, out today. If you're watching, if you're listening later, it's a week ago. Here are the people on the list, and I'll note first timers: Bobby Abreu, Josh Beckett, Heath Bell, Eric Chavez, Adam Dunn, Sean Figgins, Rafael Furcal, Jason Giambi, Raul Ibanez, Derek Jeter, Paul Konerko, Cliff Lee, Carlos Pena, Brad Penny, J.J. Putz, Brian Roberts, Alfonso Soriano, and Jose Valverde are all first time on the ballot. Your other nominees who've been on the ballot before, names you might recognize: Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Todd Helton, Andrew Jones, Jeff Kent, Andy Pettit, Manny Ramirez, Scott Rolen, Curt Schilling, Gary Sheffield, Sammy Sosa, Omar Vizquel, Billy Wagner, and Larry Walker. Now, players must appear on 75% of the submitted ballots to be put into the Hall of Fame. It's going to be July 26th in Cooperstown. Now, last year, 425 ballots were submitted, and players needed 319 for induction. Players are eligible for up to 10 years on the baseball writer's ballot, and then it can go to, like, the Veterans Committee, I believe it's called. So, of the list of people here, Kareem, who are three of those people on the list that you're going to put into the Hall of Fame?
Barry Bonds.
Okay.
Andy Pettit.
Okay.
And Derek Jeter.
Yeah, I think Derek Jeter is going to be a shoo-in. I think Derek Jeter is probably going to be, I don't know if he's going to be unanimous, but he's certainly going to easily go in on the first ballot. He should
be pretty close, yeah.
So for me, I mean, if you're going to put Bonds in, I think you have to put Clemens in too. I honestly do.
I just don't like him personally.
I understand that. I didn't
pick him.
Well, a lot of people don't like Barry Bonds either. But as I go through this list, I would say, yeah, I mean, I know for sure that Jeter is going in. Jeter's going in first ballot. I agree with you. I think Barry Bonds should go in with an asterisk, go, hey, here's what happened. I mean, we can't ignore everything that happened. I mean, he was clearly the most dominant player in baseball for a decade. And to not have him in the Hall of Fame in some manner, shape, or form, I think is a disservice to the game. I understand that you're like, well, we're not going to entrap. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. I think Roger Clemens, under those same terms, needs to go in. I don't think either one of them ever tested positive for anything.
No.
There were just all of these suspicions, but they were two of the most dominant players for an extended period of time, and keeping them out does not make any sense. Of the rest of them, boy, I think Jeff Kent deserves to go in. I don't think Andy Pettit's a Hall of Famer. Manny Ramirez actually did test positive, so that's the big thing that's keeping him out. I think Gary Sheffield is someone who deserves consideration for it as well as Larry Walker. And
Alfonso Soriano.
No.
No, I was trying to remember. He had a couple of good, everybody else is up here. They had a couple of good years that they weren't right. Great.
Dominant for a long period of time. That's where it comes down for me is if you're going to be in that's kind of the bellwether. Paul Konerko had a really nice career. I don't think he's a Hall of Fame player.
Yeah.
Jeff Kent, because of the position he played and how good he was offensively, I think he's a Hall of Fame player. Andrew Jones, I think, is borderline. Yeah. I think Todd Helton is hurt by the fact that he played at Coors Field for so long. Same with Larry Walker, although Larry Walker's numbers away from Coors Field were better than his home numbers. So that does not hold water. And I'm just imagining Jason, if he were here, being really bored with this, but I don't care.
Yeah. And this was actually when I actually watched baseball and paid attention to the numbers and everything.
So. Yeah.
But
I mean,
there were a bunch of good players, but they're not a.
Right.
I mean, Derek Jeter is. Of the new names, Derek Jeter is legitimately the only great player in that list of players.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Bobby Abreu was good for a long time, but never great. Josh Beckett had a couple of no-hitters, but I don't think he would qualify as great.
How did Eric Chavez get up there?
He's just been retired long enough.
Okay.
That's all it is. I mean, that's why, I mean, Sean Figgins had a few decent years with the Angels, but he does not belong in any serious conversation for the Hall of Fame. It's just, these are the people that are on the ballot. Jose Valverde deserves no consideration for this at all. So it'll be interesting to see what ends up happening, who is going to finally break through of the quote unquote steroid era guys and be put into the Hall of Fame. I think this might be the year that you put in Clemens and Bonds with Giambi.
Yeah. Aaron, I don't think Giambi deserves to be in either.
God, I don't know why I said Giambi. Bonds and Clemens with Jeter.
Okay.
Sorry. All right, my bad.
Wait a minute.
Yes. Yes. Put in Giambi. Just go ahead. Go ahead and do that.
I would put Konerko in before I would Giambi.
Yeah. I mean, I would put Jeff Kent in before I would put, I mean, of all the other guys, I think it's Jeff Kent.
And Andrew Jones.
I would never put Curt Schilling in. He can take his bloody sock and suck on it.
I think that's who I was thinking of when I was said that. Curt Schilling, yeah.
Yeah. Curt Schilling had moments, but no.
Yeah, no, I would put Roger Clemens in. It wasn't, that's who, not, that's not who I was thinking of. I was thinking of Curt Schilling.
Yeah, Curt Schilling's terrible.
Yeah, so yeah, Roger Clemens, definitely.
Yeah, so that's our baseball talk for now. I don't see any big announcements right now, so moving on. All right, so it's time to meet Franklin Redfearn. He's the bug-eyed Louisianan. He's 27. If you're watching on video, you're welcome. He was arrested on a Friday for narcotics possession. He told cops the devil framed him. Not the devil made him do it. The devil framed him.
The devil put some meth in your butt.
The devil framed me. Responding to a 911 call about a suspicious person, police found Redfearn standing on a porch in a residence of West Monroe, according to a police report. Now, he lives about 20 miles away in the town of Eros. Now, as a sheriff deputy approached him, Redfearn allegedly threw a white pill bottle containing methamphetamine into the yard. Now, after being read his rights, he stated the devil framed him. Despite that compelling explanation, he was arrested on felony narcotics possession count and booked into the local jail, where he is being held on $3,000 bond. He appears to be the sole individual charged in the meth case, according to court records that do not name any co-defendants or personifications of evil.
Redfearn.
The eyes on this guy.
Devil. Redfearn is the devil.
Oh, it's bad times. Bad times in Louisiana. very, very bad times in Louisiana. Oh, hey, Justin Lair, how are you? He's watching, or he was 15 minutes ago. So we got through that. We know what's going on in Louisiana, but are you ready for what's going on in our favorite state?
Florida, land of enchantment and crazy shit. This is Florida Corner.
All right. In Florida, crime does you. Headline, man claims wind blew bag of coke into his car.
Wow.
During a traffic stop, a Florida man told police that, he told them that wind may have blown a bag of cocaine residue into his vehicle. That's according to an arrest affidavit. Cops in Fort Pierce pulled over a vehicle driven by Joseph Zach, who's 37, after the car did not pause at a stop sign. Note that they said pause and not stop.
Yeah.
I like that. Now, with Zach's sedan still in motion, an officer spotted Zach making furtive movements, leaning over toward the center console as attempting to discard an item out the passenger window. Now, after his auto came to a stop, an officer approached the car and saw the suspect trying to conceal an open can of Budweiser. So he's got good taste. A subsequent search of the car turned up a glass crack pipe and a clear baggie with whitish residue, which tested positive for crack cocaine. Question about the baggie, Zach denied ownership of the item and claimed that the police or the wind must have placed it there.
Why are all these white people smoking crack in Florida?
It's not. Look, equal opportunities. Equal opportunities. He was subsequently arrested on multiple charges, booked into the St. Lucie County Jail. He was later released on bond. He works as a painter, and he's scheduled for a December 3rd arraignment hearing. So I guess he gets to explain himself in court, as one should. And meanwhile, also in Florida, following his arrest for possession of a hypodermic needle containing methamphetamine, a 380-pound Florida man was hit with an additional felony charge after jail personnel discovered a bag of meth wedged deep within the belly button cavity of the defendant.
Oh, my God.
Have you heard everything yet? Wait. Police responding late Friday to a suspicious person call placed by employees of a McDonald's arrested Martin Skelly when a search of the 41-year-old St. Petersburg residence turned up a loaded needle. Now, following Skelly's caller for possession of narcotics and drug paraphernalia, cops asked him if he was in possession of any other contraband, since he could face additional charges if he brought illegal firearms into county jail. He denied having any additional contraband on his person. However, during intake processing at the jail, he was subjected to a thorough body search that resulted in the discovery of a small plastic bag containing 2.7 grams of meth. A jail deputy reported that the baggie was wedged deep within the belly button cavity of the 5'8" defendant.
Wait. He's 5'8", 380 pounds?
Yes, sir.
Holy shit, Batman.
It's a lot of man. After the meth stash was found around 1:45 a.m., Skelly reportedly told an investigator, "I was just being dumb and not thinking." After the... Well, you know, know your weaknesses. The discovery of the hidden meth resulted in two additional felony charges being filed, introducing contraband into a correctional facility and narcotics possession. He is locked up in lieu of $9,150 bond. His criminal record includes a three-year stretch in state prison for cocaine trafficking and bus for theft, drunk driving, narcotics possession, violating probation, and possession of drug paraphernalia.
Wow.
Yeah, busy boy. I mean, that's Florida Corner. I'm just trying to think. If you could, would you hide something like that in your belly button? I mean, I guess you're thinking no one's going to look there.
Yeah.
If you're going to jail, though, they're going to search. They do a cavity search there. You think they're not going to poke around in your massive belly button?
I think they make you pull up the folds and everything.
Wow.
With him, they'd probably be like, lift up your titty.
It's a banner week in Florida. All right, this came across my radar just recently. Someone posted it on Facebook, and they're very excited about it because people love to hate the e-scooters.
Of course.
Love to hate them.
And e-bikes.
Yep. In the headline posted on the SacramentoCityExpress.com website, traffic and parking enforcement begins for shared e-scooters and bikes on November 19th, which was... Well, if you're watching live, it's tomorrow, and if you're not, it's already happened. The City of Sacramento Police and Public Works Department have begun enforcement of all traffic and parking laws for users of shared rideables such as e-bikes and e-scooters. The enforcement begins after months of education and outreach by the city while residents and visitors became used to the new devices, and a lot of people complained. The city continues to be excited about the additional transportation options, but we want to ensure that all these shared scooter bike riders know and follow all traffic laws. The Sacramento police officers will actively be looking for traffic or vehicle code violations beginning, again, tomorrow if you're watching live, and last Tuesday if you're not, and could cite users of the devices. Parking enforcement officers from Public Works will begin reporting parking violations to device operators who may choose to pass those costs on to the individuals who improperly parked those devices. Because they were new, we wanted to do ample education before issuing citations. That's from Sacramento Police Captain Norm Long. The move to enforcement sends a clear message that we're serious about creating an environment that will be safe for pedestrians, shared rideable users, and drivers. Kareem, has crime gotten so low in Sacramento that this is where we are?
No.
I mean, because isn't that great? This is the biggest thing we have to worry about is somebody's scooter.
Well, you know, all these people are going to all these farmers markets around town and all of these beer places. So they want them to be safe.
That's not who they're. You know the people that are complaining. The people that are complaining about this are state workers who roll into downtown and are like, oh my God. And look, I'm not in favor of people causing a hazard with them.
No.
I'm not at all. But is this really a great use of police resources? I mean, how are they going to hand out all of those parking tickets?
Oh, it's revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not about listening to your concerns. We've listened to your concerned citizen. And we're going to do something about this scourge of scooters.
Plus, we need some revenue.
The scooter scourge. And honestly,
we have an arena to pay for, goddammit.
We do.
And a soccer field.
Well, that's privately financed.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's privately financed. There's tax breaks that go along with it for infrastructure and all that, but it's privately financed. So the funny thing is, for all of the complaining that I see about scooters and the e-bikes, and I see a lot of it on Facebook. I don't see a ton of photos that back up this anger. And I've seen them in other cities where there'll be 5 and 6 of these scooters like thrown into a pile in the middle of a sidewalk.
I haven't seen that.
I've seen that happen in places like LA and places where they've got like 5 and 6 different scooter companies.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen that level. All I see is randomly, and I saw one on Facebook this morning. There was a scooter that had tipped over on part of the sidewalk. And the person who posted about it said, "Hey man, don't be careless and cause me to trip." And I'm thinking, how do you trip on that? Are you not looking?
They're texting and walking.
God forbid that there, I've walked around this city. There's places where the sidewalk sticks up 2-3 inches. If you're going to get tripped up by a bright green scooter, that sidewalk's going to take you down, and it's going to take you down hard. That's what I'm saying. Fine.
I haven't really seen them in really out of the way places. They're usually where they're supposed to be. And I see people on them all the time.
I see people on them all the time. I see them on my street. People on my street will leave them parked out in front of their, they'll like ride it home or over to visit somebody, and they'll just leave them there. And not really that big a deal.
Yeah.
It really isn't.
I did see one by your house like three or four times going when we used to do it up.
Oh yeah, the e-bikes. There's always an e-bike parked on my street. Yeah. There's occasionally a scooter parked on my street. And big deal. They come around and collect the damn things and distribute them out like every night. So
find something else to complain about, people.
Well, yeah, this has been settled. Settled.
Stop acting like you're in Plattsburgh.
They don't need Speak Out. We got Facebook.
That's right.
You got Facebook to complain about such things. So, yes, go ahead and live your life, citizen. It's been a good run. And, again, now that crime is settled in Sacramento and we can all rest easy and Batman doesn't have to worry about swinging through and capturing evil villains. Although, wouldn't it be great if we had our own Sacramento superhero who's only thing they did was foil scooter riders?
They call white women.
I foiled you again, scooter rider. No. No.
I'm going to call the police on you.
Now I'll have to take an Uber. By the way, Uber owns most of the scooters in town.
Oh,
jump bikes and scooters. That's owned by Uber.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah. So it's all part of the same thing. Yeah. So rest easy, citizen. Rest easy. Sacramento is all over it for you. And speaking of being on it, there's a new campaign in South Dakota because apparently they've got a meth issue, as a lot of smaller communities do. And in South Dakota, they've decided to put their money where their mouth is. And
because they don't have any teeth left.
it's a meth awareness campaign that has been launched in all over the state of South Dakota. And it's titled Meth, We're On It.
Oh, wow.
I know they don't mean it in the way that it actually says, but Governor Kristi Noem has a message for South Dakota. Meth, we're on it. Okay. All right. Hold on. I'll get it squirted. It loaded very slowly. So let me unmute it so we can all hear it and enjoy the majesty of meth. We're on it from South Dakota.
I'm on meth.
I'm on meth.
I'm on it too. So am I.
So am I.
I'm on meth.
Meth is not someone else's problem. It's everyone in South Dakota's problem. And we need everyone to get on it.
I'm on it.
I'm on it.
I'm on it too.
He could barely contain his laughter.
I'm getting paid for this, right? Get a check for this? It's all good? All right.
They put all the black people they had in South Dakota in that one ad.
those are all Kenyans, Kareem. Kenyan stock footage is what that all. That's all what it is.
Oh my God.
Meth, we're
on it.
On it. I get what they were trying to do. I really do. But no. 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 I mean, they're getting criticized for it, as they should, because it's kind of there's the graphic. If you're watching on video, you can see it. Meth, we're on it. If you didn't know what South Dakota looks like, that's what it looks like on meth. I don't mean to make fun. It's a serious issue. It is. But you know what else is a serious issue? Thinking things through. Because it seems to be lacking. All right. Enough. Enough. Enough making fun of South Dakota. We'll do this.
Let's leave the hustle and bustle for small town news.
And make fun of North Dakota. It's time for the Eat Beat, where Marilyn... Oh, Marilyn. Marilyn Haggerty. She's 93, by the way. National treasure. Mayor Mike Brown's chili recipe is a mainstay at Empty Bowls event.
Empty bowl.
That's right. The next day, it's called Empty Bowels. He figures it takes 25 minutes to prepare his chili and another 2 hours to cook it. And once again, Mayor Mike Brown of Grand Forks joined those who took part in the 15th annual Empty Bowls Soup Day. Empty Bowls Soup Day. Proceeds from the event held each year at the gymnasium at St. Michael's School go to hunger relief programs of St. Joseph's Social Care and Thrift Store on 8th Avenue. Excuse me. So the mayor's chili, how does he make it? Well, he uses the following ingredients. 3 pounds of ground beef, or 1.5 pounds each of beef and venison. Pound and a half of ground pork, pound and a half of bacon, coarsely chopped, 1 can of red beans, 1 can of black beans, 1 can of pinto beans, 6 cups of tomatoes, diced, 3 cans of tomato puree, 2 large cans of tomato juice, 1 onion, chopped, 1.5 cups of celery, chopped, 2 to 3 garlic cloves, minced, 1.5 tablespoons of sugar, or to taste, 2.5 tablespoons of cumin, 1.5 teaspoons oregano, 1 tablespoon chili powder, 3/4 teaspoon of cayenne pepper, 2 red bell peppers, chopped, salt and pepper to taste. Now the mayor cooks the meat and onions in a large pot or Dutch oven. Dutch oven. To brown it.
You definitely going to do it after you eat it.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I'm just reading. Or Dutch oven, browning it and draining the fat. He adds remaining ingredients and brings them to a boil. He then reduces the heat, covers and simmers his chili for 1 to 2 hours. Suggested garnish. I can't read it.
Suggested garnish is chopped cilantro and shredded cheese.
Yes, along with soup, there's always a silent auction at the annual soup day. All guests who make a minimum donation of $20 go away with a hand-painted bowl, and some buy extra bowls. Well, of course, the bowls are painted by community groups, and around 1,000 were given out at the supper and purchased at silent auctions. Valor Insurance Company was the winner in the category for best design by area businesses. This year, there was an attendance of around 500 at the supper. According to Mickey Munson, he's the new director of St. Joseph's Social Care and Thrift Store. He succeeds Joanne Brunden, who's been the director for 19 years. There were 9 different soups, and the Nifla soup made by Sarah Munson was the first to go. Desserts for the soup supper are provided by members of the Catholic churches, including St. Michael's, St. Mary's, Holy Family, and the Newman Center at UND. Oh, but that's not all. There's a pie-making priest.
What?
Among guests at the Monday soup supper, I don't know why my eyes are watering, was Phil Ackerman, a priest who formerly served Holy Family Church in Grand Forks.
For 12 years, for the past 5 years, he has been at St. Alphonsus Church in Langdon. If he is asked anywhere to bring a pie, he makes it himself maybe sour cream raisin or lemon meringue. Of course, he said, I do not lie. For the crust, he uses 1 cup of flour, 1/2 cup of Crisco, 1/4 cup of water, and he uses a KitchenAid mixer. Mr. Ackerman said his twin sister, Phyllis Morin, who formerly lived in Grand Forks, has moved to Mesa, Arizona.
Well, that's an important detail. If you're looking for Phyllis, she moved.
Guess that's why come the pie tastes like it does.
Oh, boy. So anyway, thank you, Kareem, for the assist on that one. I needed that. That's going to do it for Small Town News, and that's going to do it for this episode of the WTH Podcast. Hope you had a great one, whether you're joining us live, on watching us on YouTube, or just listening in your ears. Thank you so much. Jason, feel better. We'll see you next time on the WTH Podcast. By the way, this one drops on my anniversary. So happy anniversary, Leslie. I love you. All right. We'll see you, everybody.
Leslie, we love you.
Yeah, love you.
We love you.
All right. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.